Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Boys, I like talking about movies. I just had a movie experience that to me felt like the most millennial movie experience I've ever had. And I'm noticing this now when I watch movies. I feel like I can tell when they're made by millennials and when they have the ethos of millennials. And it just raised a lot of questions for me. Piper, you're either like a young Gen X guy or an old millennial. So we're going to lean heavily on you for this one. But we'll get into all that after we pay some bills. All right, boys, we're back. So I watched the Netflix movie You People recently. Have you guys seen You People? And it doesn't matter if you haven't. I think the conversation still works.
I saw almost half of it.
Yeah, okay. So You People is Jonah Hill plays a Jewish guy, falls in love with a black girl. Hijinks ensue. Their families are against it. They're trying to undermine the whole thing. Eddie Murphy's in it. And it's like he's reading off cue cards. It was just a total like mail in for Eddie Murphy. I kept waiting for him to dial it up and be
mail me that like, check for Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, it was like late career De Niro, where he's just popping up on a bunch of terrible things and just collecting a payday. But Ron, you've seen half of it. Did it scan as like ragingly millennial to you?
I mean, yeah. I mean, 100. I mean, it was like the. It was like people that have grown up with just sort of the, you know, the super awkward, uncomfortable style humor that's like hitting all the trigger buttons in terms of like race and, you know, all those. And they're doing it so on cue where you just go, oh, my gosh, I literally know what they're going to do next. And they do it, you know, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was to me. And so you tapped out halfway through. I'll be interested to hear about why. I finished the whole thing and to me, it watched like a less good version of the show Curb Your Enthusiasm, if you've seen that, which allowed like Curb was always kind of like social issues adjacent and awkward. And Larry David was kind of forever fumbling his way through like being on the wrong side of these social issues, sometimes accidentally, sometimes because he's an idiot. And you were invited to laugh at it and kind of feel awkward about it. This one was sort of like 90 minutes of a real movie and then 10 minutes of an after school special sort of tacked onto the end to like tell you exactly what to think and feel about it. And the redeeming part of it was that Jonah Hill was really funny he's just fun to be with. Like I enjoy being with him in almost any movie that he's in, but it had a bunch of phrases like, you don't see me, I want to be seen. And it had like the female character who like dresses like a guy, talks like a guy, looks like a guy, refers to herself as one of the boys, but then gets super offended when somebody treats her like a guy. The main character's jobs were podcaster and like Etsy designer. They shared an affinity for rap and shoe shopping. Like in this, it just struck me as the most millennial thing ever. My question to you, Pipe.
I have a question. Like, did they explain any of the economics of podcasting? Because I'm fascinated to know how somebody makes a career out of this. We've been at it for like 10 years.
He was trying. He was attempting.
Okay.
Yeah, and they both had like incredible apartments in LA despite being Etsy designers and podcasters. It was kind of amazing. I was like, I want to host that podcast. You know, they're killing it. Pipe, what's your experience been with millennial movies? Like being a older millennial yourself, is this something you're noticing in your like movie watching life?
It's hard for me to answer that because by and large, I see, like, I'll watch a trailer and be like, oh, I'm not watching that garbage. That looks stupid. Like, mm-hmm. None of them, like, what else would be an example that I'm, because I skip that stuff because I'm like, I don't need a social issues movie to shove something down my throat. Like, if you're talking about a historic movie, like, you know, Till or something like that, that's a whole other thing. But if you're talking about, like, this kind of, like, just tropey movie, it has no appeal to me whatsoever. And by and large, I think my generation has stunk at creating film. Like, my generation is the one that has brought about remakes of everything old and then massive franchises. I don't think we make it, but we have been the generation that has sort of poured into that being the successful stuff, which is not good. Like, we've lost good movie making from, you know, like it was years and years ago, where like you could have a smaller budget movie and tell a story with compelling characters, none of which seems to exist anymore unless it's super arty and then Brett McCracken writes an article about it. So it's what are some of these other millennial movies that I may have seen? Because by and large, it just doesn't resonate with me.
Yeah, that's a good point. Here's an example of one from you people. And you've got me really thinking now whether McCracken is going to write a piece on this. Like, I don't know if this hits the McCracken Mendoza line of like being relevant enough for him to write about. But if he writes about it, I will legitimately read the piece. I'm interested in his take. But tell me if you got this far in the movie, Big R. There was this character. It was Jonah Hill's dad in the movie was David Duchovny from the 90s. So he was kind of making a comeback in this and he aged really well. But like, he and his wife were basically just like human punchlines. Like, they were always saying the wrong thing. And one of the like wrong, stupid things that he was always saying was he was like weirdly obsessed with the early 2000s rapper Xzibit. And that was somehow really awkward and funny. Whereas Jonah Hill's character was equally obsessed with the mid-2000s rapper Drake. But for some reason, that was neither awkward nor funny for like the social calculus of the movie. And KK and I are watching this going, like, what's the difference? You know, in another 10 years, is Jonah Hill's character going to be sort of the punchline for like co-opting Drake? I don't know. That struck me as like peak millennial energy. I don't know. Big R, what are some other examples of movies like this? Like the last one, I think we talked about it on the program, was the one that the kid who played Ryan from The Office made a movie. I really liked it, actually. I don't remember what it was called, but it was like he was a podcaster in the movie. So we're starting to get all these movies and shows where like they're podcasting in it, like only Murders in the Building, you know?
Yeah.
Like this weird like boomer / millennial energy where the main character.
That's a great example of like a movie made primarily about boomers that couldn't be more millennial, right?
Yeah, totally.
Is that about Only Murders? Okay, so I love Only Murders. I think it's hilarious. And but the reason it's hilarious is because everybody is the butt of every joke. Like there's not a these are the ones who are so cool and getting everything right, and then these are the bumbling idiots. It's like, no, literally everybody's a bumbling idiot. And sort of becomes the punchline, and it has all that that Steve Martin, Martin Short energy, which is its own special brand of genius.
Totally.
It's kind of like, though, like what I always get is like what I always, the vibe I get, I agree with everything Pipe just said. It's really good because it's written so well. Mm-hmm. But there is a sense where they try to normalize anything that in real life would be super shocky, you know? This one of the things that kills me about movies like You People and even Murders is like the level of F-bombing that just comes out like in everyday lingo. Again, you're not even angry. You're just talking that way to the person that's cashing you out at the diner. And I just go like, look, like I'm not only in church circles, like I'm all over the place. Right. And I never hear anybody talking like that. You know what I mean? Just like in totally like the waitress coming up and going, I hope you're having an effing great day. You know, like, and it's just, like that to me is one of the least believable things that I keep seeing coming out in movies made by millennials where I just go, you guys are kidding, right? Nobody is going around just like conversing like this in everyday life. But it's almost like that's something that keeps getting exaggerated to me. It happens in Murders. That's one of the things in Only Murders I hate is the dialogue seems really unbelievable to me in some of those ways. Mm-hmm. And especially You People where I'm just like, you're kidding, right? Cause like nobody's talking like this. You know?
Is that a bit? Like, you know how if there's a bit that's a little over the top and you just commit to it, it's it becomes funny. It becomes a staple. Or is it just sort of a writing trope that's not very good?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great question because I just, that has been an annoyance for me. But, you know, even going back to like some of your points, T, with like you people, by the way, got horrible reviews.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah, it's
getting
slaughtered.
Yeah. it got slaughtered. And I think I don't know how to articulate this because again, we're doing a pod and we need to be quick here. But there's something about, I always feel like they want you to, they're always trying to make what they consider to be what their version of real life believable. And to me, it almost seemed, these movies are almost like fantasies. Like they're not believable, like on any level. But they're not but not in the sense that they're giving you an idealized version of life. I mean, in some ways they are, T. You kind of said it. Like you have these two people that don't have jobs, but they're living in this really deluxe, like downtown LA apartment or whatever. Mm. So there is a fantasy element in terms of that, which might not even be fantasy. I mean, you know, I don't know how deep do we want to go and why people like that would have that kind of a place. But there's almost something surreal about everything. But at the same time, you almost feel like they're trying to pitch you like, no, this is just the way the world is now. And it's like, but it's really not. It's really not. I don't know.
All right. We're going to take a break. And then I got two things on that, a question and a comment. We'll get to them in two and two. All right, boys, we're back. And my comment on it is to the F-bombing point, Big R, I actually think that now it's a way to remind audiences that like you're watching a prestige thing, right? Like, hey, we can drop F-bombs. We're on HBO Max. This is prestige-y. So I think they do it sometimes for that reason. But my question was, you and I both love the movie Swingers, right?
Yeah.
And Swingers is nothing if not like laden with F-bombs. And I remember watching Swingers kind of in real time in the late 90s when I was a 20-year-old guy thinking like, yeah, they pretty much get it right. That's pretty much how like dudes my age talk. You know, maybe not quite that F-bomby, but close, you know. So there was an element of that at least in the 90s, it rang true to me. And I think it rang true with you because we're both big fans of that movie. What do you think of that?
I don't know. There's like I know what you're saying. Yeah. So it's not to say that like 25 years ago, people weren't F-bombing it in movies. It's more of it's almost like they were doing it, you know, they were doing it as a way to like present like a certain kind of humor. And I feel like now it's presented as just, it's the way we say yeah and uh-huh. And
you're right.
There's a cynicism to it now.
Yeah.
Right. To where like when you're watching Swingers, I mean, these dudes, they're not taking anything serious.
Right. You know? Right.
And maybe that's from my vantage point that would be a classic Gen X film, obviously. Yeah. But see, I don't know.
I don't think it's as fake as you think it is. Like I don't encourage this behavior, but it is a good place for market research. Like, go hang out in some bars and restaurants in East Nashville where it is largely millennials. You know, it's a bunch of like late 20s to early 40s people who are, you know, already creative, entrepreneurial, want to be younger than they are. And it sounds not unlike a lot of that dialogue where the way you say yes is to say F yeah. Like that's just sort of the norm. And the barista might swear to you, not at you, but just to you. You know, if you're like, hey, what's your favorite thing on the menu? They'll be like, oh, the creme brulee latte is so effing good. And you're just like, oh, okay, I guess I'm not getting that. That sounds not like my thing. I only do black Americanos per last episode. It kind of is the norm. But your point about it being sort of
it's
cynical,
been normalized. I get that. I get that too.
It does have a sort of cynicism and detachment to it where it keeps you from sounding too invested in anything. You know?
Exactly.
When everything is profane, nothing is heartfelt. And so, you know, if a movie's just effing awesome, that's different than I loved that movie. You know? They mean the exact same thing, except they don't.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. I think the other difference about these movies, and tell me if you've noticed this, is that like they're looking at you looking at them in a way that
yes.
previous generations of movies
That's
never
good
did.
Too.
It's like That's this really Ryan good. Reynolds thing of like, one eye is in character and the other eye is like winking at the camera. Like
at the camera, 100%.
Yeah, noticing you, noticing me. You know, so I just don't like that because it sort of, to me, it erodes the like world building qualities of a movie. Like when I'm watching a movie, I want to immerse myself in that world for 2 hours. But watching you people was sort of an exercise in like they're watching me watching them. And I could never really like enter the world that they were trying to create, ludicrous as it was. But to that point, like our generation did a brisk business in this. Like, it's not like there was anything realistic about Friends, right? Friends was the most ridiculous like Gen X thing imaginable in that like it's like college without the classes. Like they're having coffee all day and they're talking about themselves, you know, and they're living in 2,000 square feet in New York, which nobody could afford. And it was just this ridiculous thing. But
to be fair, they did all have good jobs except for Joey.
Yeah, I wasn't as big of a Friends guy. Were you guys big Friends guys, like in real time?
I hated it, but I'm aware of it.
Yeah. So not funny, you guys. Don't get me started. I can't even fathom how anybody in human history ever thought that show was funny. It's unbelievably unfunny to me. Unbelievably unfunny.
So let me ask you this, though. Like, as kind of Gen X or Gen X adjacent, what was the appeal of it? Because I agree. Like, I was not a fan in real time, but I knew people who were, and I sort of assented to the fact that it was popular.
Well, it was the sitcom version of Singles and Reality Bites, you know. In that sense, it was.
But
just
I love
like,
both
hey,
of those things.
Know.
Like,
well, I know. Well, it's different when you have 2 hours and when you have like 5 years of the biggest, you know, network, you know, TV sitcom in history too. So I guess that's you just got a pinch of it with those movies because they're just movies, maybe.
When
Friends just inundated the world with their.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was almost like slapstick to me. Yeah. I felt like Friends was the Gen X slipping on the banana peel, and like that was the kind of humor they were like literally pitching at you the whole time. And I'm like, this is so weird to me. I felt like every joke was like sort of like a version of Am I right? You know, and everything
they needed finger guns after every joke.
Mm-hmm. I gotta stop talking.
Yeah.
I think the appeal ahead, of Mike. It was, I mean, in part, I mean, a lot of people think it's funny, which just goes to show the range and sense of humor as well as, you know, yeah, just, I don't know. Humor is a strange thing in terms of how it strikes us. But the other is,
we all got our thing. It's all good.
Yeah. You think about sort of the generational gap. So that Friends got big in what, like 94, 95 was kind of its 93-ish in there. So It was so anti baby boomer sensibility in terms of independence, the sexuality of the humor. You have all of these sort of like garish, outsized personalities. You have beautiful people. It's a life that everybody's like, man, wouldn't that be nice? Like, I know it's fake, but man, wouldn't that be nice? And the thing is that continues to work because now there's shows like Big Bang Theory and New Girl, which were sort of they followed in the footsteps, same like amazing apartment in these cool cities by people who are the exact same kind of pattern of humor and everything. But it's just, I think it's sort of that, like people wanted to be part of that life. They're like, wouldn't it be great to hang out with these people? And you know, for guys like us, we're like, no, I would want to smack all of them. But for millions and millions of people, they're like, man, we would be great friends. I would love to hang with them.
We're just living life. And isn't it crazy? It's crazy, man. We're just like we're just living life, man. I mean, we're just kind of doing what we want. We're not really hippies, but we're, you know, I mean, that older generation, I mean, they're just bumming us out, right? I mean, we're just doing our thing. It's like, it's fun though, huh? It's crazy, you know. It's, oh my gosh, it's, I don't know, I could never fathom that. And you know, and I like other things that people are going to think, well, that's dumb, that's not funny at all. So I get it. Humor is a personal thing for sure, but I never got the appeal of that show. And again, it, you know, coming out at the time that it did, it's, you know, it, to your point, Pipe, I mean, it's no different than what we're, you know, every generation has their, you know, has their sort of their television that sort of, you know, kind of encompasses who they are, you know, so it'll be interesting. I'm trying to think of like my daughter who's 27. I'm trying to think of like what that what that would have been for her at this stage of the game. And I don't even, I'm trying to think. I mean, I'm thinking like Nickelodeon shows for her, but that was, but then when she became a little more of like mid to late teen, like, I don't even know. I don't even know if there's anything like that is representative of that.
Dude, that generation kind of leans hard on. Yeah, they lean hard on like the ironic nostalgia of like the Nickelodeon show. Like, so for them getting together and talking about the super kitschy like Nickelodeon thing they watched as kids, and then remarking on how like all those actors went on to become pop stars, and like, oh, haha, aren't they stupid? You know,
it's like, more like age of irony. It's almost like so dumb it's cool. You know, like that kind of that era. So it's like we're almost like we're chuckling at it, even though we're still interested in it. But we don't want anyone to think we take it too seriously.
Right.
It's the inverse of what you were talking about, Ted, with, you know, you watch that movie and it's like they're watching you watch the movie. Millennials watching something humorous, it's like they're watching themselves watch this movie. So there's a detached reaction to it as opposed to just being into the movie. So like the, you know, you think about like Tommy Boy or Billy Madison or one of these movies that was sort of our adolescent humor. We were not thinking about how we reacted to that movie. We were just thinking, this is hilarious.
Now, reacting to that movie wasn't a reflection on us.
No. And it was just sort of like unfiltered guffawing at absurdity and nonsense and crassness and whatever. Whereas you get, you know, millennials, I think especially younger millennials, and it's sort of a reaction is a posture. You know, what's the...
Totally.
What is the right reaction to this humor? And so if you throw something silly in front of them, that's sort of, you know, that's dumb. And so all humor has to be sort of poking fun at and detached and distant in the same way that using a ton of profanity keeps you at arm's length from, you know, gushing or affection or whatever, you know, anything vulnerable.
Yeah.
Which is funny because it's also the generation that talks about vulnerability the most while keeping everything at arm's length. It's a bit confused.
That's fascinating. Well, and it makes sense because it's the first generation where you could really publicly consume things, right? So like I remember even when I don't know, the blogosphere started in like 2002 or whenever that started, it sort of opened up this whole realm, and social media just accelerated this exponentially, but this whole realm of like, oh, like I just watched a movie, now I can write about it on my blog. Like my Friday or Saturday night experience of watching a movie with my wife can now become content. And in that way, it can be part of how people metabolize and consume me as a personality. And I think that generation just grew up native to that whole experience, right? Yeah. So like a thing isn't just a thing that I watch. A thing is now something that I use to build my own persona. And I think to a large degree, like our generation has adopted that. Like we have, in a sense, like retroactively taken that thing on as a thing that we do. Mm. And by and large, it sucks, right? Like I kind of think it sucks, but it's just everybody's doing it now, you know?
Yeah, which, you know, last episode we talked about Gen Z and how they, you sort of complimented them in their ability to sort of absorb all this information and come out with a, you know, kind of a, this is where I'm at. And they pivot really fast from one to the other, but they actually feel way less posture-y than millennials or Gen Xers in terms of those things. You know, way less of like, I'm wearing the jersey of irony, and more just like, nah, man, this is just what I like as I process all this information. And I'm going to like something different tomorrow. And then I'm going to like something different next week. And it feels hard to keep up with for us old folks.
Are you saying like way less like self-conscious?
Yeah.
Would that be a way to describe it?
So, whereas, you look at the way that our generation or generations, wherever you want to divide that line, use consumption, so consuming media, movies, music, whatever, as a means for posturing, as a means for posing, as a means for, you know, whatever my vibe is, we're super self-conscious about it. It's why millennial create like art, music, movies, whatever feels self-conscious. And which is not, you know, which isn't awesome. It's not great for storytelling. It's not great for genuineness. It's not great for a lot of things. And it's, it's hard to know exactly where it came from. Like, why are we the way we are? But yeah, Gen Z is distinctly different on that front. I think they're way more sort of carefree on the posturing, self-consciousness side of things. They have a whole bunch of other challenges.
Kind
of
nice.
Don't have, but
kind of nice.
Yeah,
it is kind of nice. Yeah. Like, and I think that might also be a function of like everybody consuming everything at a different pace. So like nobody's really consuming anything at the same time anymore. So they're allowed to like react to it in ways that are a little bit more personal. And because you're not allowed to come at anybody for anything anymore, it's like if they're really into Olivia Rodrigo, but I'm able to say I am the exact diametric opposite of the target demo for that. Like, they're okay with me not liking it. Like, they're just like, yeah, this isn't for you, and that's fine. And it's like there's no, yeah, there's no pretense of I'm gonna put this jersey on even for a minute.
And there's no such thing as a guilty pleasure anymore, because it's like there are kids who go to school that they're called furries. Like they think they're animals. And like you're not allowed to. Once we've reached that point, it's like, oh yeah, there's no guilty pleasures anymore. Yeah. Like everything's on the table for better and worse.
Yeah. If you don't feel ashamed about putting on like a like a rabbit suit and like going to school in it, then yeah, there is no shame anymore. Everything's on the table. Boys, unfortunately, everything is not still on the table conversationally, and that I have to go to a thing that starts in like 2 minutes. So I'm going to call this 26 minutes of good radio, in which we did what we always do. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
What do you do when your world is falling apart? How do you march when it would be easier to stay where you are and die? Join me every week on the March or Die podcast, and we'll discuss that and so much more.